Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
When I first saw the photo of Ford with the noose around his neck, I instantly freaked out. I felt like it was definitely a cry for help. I didn't know how to talk to him about it or bring it up. I'm like, okay, well, you're here and you seem well.
I'm just lost, and, you know, but this whole thing is something I've been going through most of my life, honestly. I just feel like I'm better alone gone. I feel like I'm better off gone. Like, I think I'd be more valued. I'd be more respected if I wasn't in
there. Stop, Forrest. Stop saying that. That's not true.
That is an excerpt from the reality TV series Black Ink Crew Chicago. The character known as Forrest, struggling with depression, it shocks the rest of the crew and brings his hidden pain into sharp focus. Well, tonight, we're digging even deeper into the issue of black men.
When I first saw the photo of Forrest with the noose around his...
of black men and mental health. My guests are Dr. Jeff Menzies, clinical psychologist and lead consultant with Mind on the Matter. Also, Dr. Gina Brown, dean of the School of Allied Health here at Howard University. Lines are open if you have a question, if you have a comment about depression or mental health, specifically as it relates to black men. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHUR. And before we even get into this very important discussion tonight, I want to make sure that you have right at the top of the program this phone number for the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. We will be sharing this phone number throughout the program. It is 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-8255. Dr. Menzies and Gina Brown. Dr. Brown, thank you both for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for the invitation.
Thank you.
I want to start with this. In doing research for this discussion, we found it very difficult to locate any up-to-date statistics about black men and depression. Dr. Menzies, why do you think that is?
So a lot of time depression goes undetected as well as underreported as far as black men and men in general are concerned. And part of that is because we're not showing up to get the screenings. We're not showing up to get the assistance to take advantage of the services that do exist. And aside from that, we typically think of depression in one way. You know, somebody is sitting somewhere in a dark room by themselves, sad. And sometimes we can miss the other indicators, which could also be risky behaviors. You know, it could be the opposite. You know, somebody might take to drinking and they might say, I only drink socially, but they're always socialized, so they're always drinking. And so some of the indicators for suicide risk and depression can go undetected, therefore underreported, and therefore we missed the buck.
But with that in mind, there's a lot of information out there about black women.
Yes.
There's a lot of information out there about white men, white women, and other people, you know, other races. Why are black men seemingly at the bottom of the barrel when it comes to this kind of research?
Well, in many respects, the American society still sees the black male as being expendable, as a sort of necessary evil that, you know, we can do without. And so that's why you'll find we top the list on many indicators. High blood pressure, diabetes, you know, anything, suicide, you know, successful suicide attempts, meaning actually killing themselves. And we top all of those as mass incarceration, the most likely to be stopped by police. And so I think it's a continuation of the very same trend that we're talking about here.
Dr. Brown, one of the things that I think is really troubling from that clip, and there's so much more that we can't share with you because it's just too long. But the thing is that no one seemed to know about Ford's situation until he locked himself in the bathroom. Why is it that black men appear to be so unwilling to address this mental health issue?
It's stereotypical. It really addresses and goes to the issue that black men are supposed to be the strongest, the backbone of the family. And so it, in our minds, and in when I say our minds, the African-American community and so many other communities, mental illness is looked at as taboo. It's looked at in a way so that when they were growing up, you actually didn't discuss that. You didn't talk about it. If someone was acting, as we would say, crazy or depressed or whatever, then you'll get out of it. You'll snap out of it. And so in our community, we've always listed it as a taboo. And I was talking to Dr. Jeff earlier before the program, and I was talking to him about the fact that for African-American women, we discussed our issues over a clothesline. We had clothesline therapy where I hung my clothes and you hung your clothes, and we talked about our problems, and we went to church and we testified in prayer meeting, and we went to the hairdresser and we had therapy in the seat. But African-American men, even in the barbershop, did not have those types of detailed conversations, and so they started to feel alone and separated and segregated. And with the issues that our African-American men face in terms of the highest level of joblessness and the highest level of socioeconomic factors and the highest level of being stopped while driving black and all of the other things that come about, all of those factors lead to depression. And so because we don't address those, because we come home and we act like everything is okay, then those depressive behaviors don't come out until it's very late.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about black men and mental health, specifically black men and depression. If you have a question, if you have a comment, if you need help, please give us a call again. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. How does depression present for black men? Is it different than it does for black women?
It can definitely present differently. And again, all of this depends on the individual's psychological disposition. So if you're typically a high energy person, depression might manifest in that individual differently than it would somebody who's more even keeled or somebody who's low energy. So, for example, a high energy individual, their depression might their depression might exasperate their energy. Like, they may be out there more. They may engage more in risky behaviors, whether you're talking about drinking and driving, or you're talking about texting and driving, you know, intentionally doing so because it's risky. Because sometimes it's an adrenaline rush that helps to pull them out of the grasp of a energy lowering depression. Somebody who has a low level energy disposition, they, when they're experiencing depression, that might be the one who tries to stay in bed all day, who closes the blinds, you know, stay in the dark all the time, never communicates with anybody, you know, kind of isolates themselves. And so, again, the disposition of the individual sort of determines and dictates what pathway, you know, they're going to go as far as their experience and demonstrating of depression.
Right. So in nursing, we look at that as a biochemical versus a social component. The biochemical is when the chemicals are actually off balance in the body. And so those are the types of people who may isolate themselves and stay in bed and draw the curtains or have what are called risky behaviors, as Dr. Jeff has said. But the other social component where they're actually doing things that, where they close the curtains and where they don't want to be bothered, those types of biochemical versus social components are what would be displayed in terms of the depression.
Let's drill down a little bit more with that, because I was about to ask. Let us say, for example, that you may have a 30-something black man who has a good job, good education, is happily married or happily single, and all is right with the world. Could he still exhibit symptoms of depression? And is that the biochemical
absolutely
thing that you were talking
that's
about?
Absolutely. That's absolutely it. Because when you have those biochemical imbalances, sometimes the world seems completely perfect. You're not having the same issues as we would say a underprivileged black male is having. So you've already accomplished everything in life. And as you said, life is perfect, but I'm still feeling depressed. I'm still feeling like I want to end my life. I'm still feeling like I'm worthless. A lot of that is biochemical in nature. And because of we're African Americans in terms of the mental healthness and shying away from medications and shying away from therapy, then we don't do those things. And so by the time I've gone to 5 funerals of African American males who've taken their life from the age of 14 to 47, where does that come from? And each of them, all of the ones above 20 were college educated. Mm-hmm. All of the ones, they came from good families. They had a great life. They had everything that life could offer. Why in the world would you want to take your life? Because a lot of that has some biochemical drivers behind it. And when those are not mental health, mental illness, and what we have to understand as a community is the same as having lung cancer or diabetes or hypertension. It's just the brain that has that biochemical imbalance versus my lungs or versus my pancreas or versus something else that's going on. So it's just a different organ that's having a different effect. And we don't look at it that way. We look at it as being stereotypical. There's no way most black men are going to go to counseling or take a psychiatric drug in order to make them feel better. That's going to make somebody's going to start to say, what's wrong with you? Are you crazy?
And sometimes, you know, when somebody seems to be successful, that's on the outside looking in. The individual who is college educated, gainfully employed, they're still constantly, especially as a black man, experiencing what we consider to be microaggressions, you know, which are the subtle experiences of racism. And so when a black man is experiencing that throughout the day constantly, you know, they may be gainfully employed, but they might have been overlooked for the raise. They might have been overlooked for the promotion. They may be having relationship problems to where when they come home, they don't feel respected. They don't feel like they're contributing to the level that they themselves feel that they should be. And so outside looking in, it could be fine. But internally, they may be having a dialogue that says, I'm frustrated. I'm a failure. I wanted to go to medical school to be a neurosurgeon. I went to medical school and I'm, quote unquote, only a general practitioner. Mm-hmm. And so we set our own standards with the assistance of society. Mm-hmm. And that's why the American Psychological Association recently released a set of guidelines about working with men and boys. They talk about how some of the stereotypes that are imposed upon our male children kind of help to build these expectations that kind of set us up for failure later in life. Now, one thing I disagree with the APA's guidelines is that they don't speak about the experiences of racism throughout it at all. Mm. And so they kind of slant it towards there being a natural problem with maleness and manhood, generally speaking. Like, for example, we've all heard that boys can't sit still in the classroom. You know, and that's just like boys can't. That means that there's what, something natural innate in boys that won't allow them to sit still. Mm-hmm. And so we have to start to check ourselves with our own biases and expectations for males, because what we do is we begin to impose unrealistic expectations across the board. It may be good for this type of boy. It may be totally unnecessary and actually dangerous for this type of boy.
Let me go to the phone lines real quick. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Judy, calling from Baltimore. Thanks for calling, Judy. Quickly, what's on your mind?
I was wondering about how you deal with the man that is bipolar, has been diagnosed and is taking medication, but with the highs and lows that they have, mm-hmm. like you don't know which person or how they're going to be every single day. Like they're pulling you down or up with them. And if you're not on that level of real lows or highs, you're like trash.
Mm. Any thoughts?
The whole bipolar component, and thank you so much for asking that question, really is addressed by, we talked about the two compositions of social versus biochemical. Bipolar disease process is a chemical, biochemical imbalance. It's the same as it would be for any other type of medical component. The medication regimen is hugely important to ensure that they are taking their medications on a consistently regular basis,
right,
at the same time every day.
Right.
So if they're supposed to take it twice a day, it needs to be at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. It can't be fluctuating where they take it right one time this time of day and a different time this time of day. The other component to that is to make sure that their levels are straight. So that means constant blood draws,
right,
to ensure that those levels are consistently where they need to be for that disease process.
Because it's supposed to try. The purpose is to balance them out
balance
and to keep them as
exactly
level as consistently as possible to prevent that pendulum from swinging.
Correct.
You know, from the manic aspect, you know, the hyperactive
that's
aspect,
right,
to the depressed aspect.
That's right.
And if a person is experiencing those swings, mm-hmm, as you're saying, they need to go get their blood checked, make sure that the dosage that they're receiving,
correct,
is appropriate,
and that the medication is correct. The medication, there's so many different types of medications. You have SSRIs,
right,
and other,
right,
things, and some,
okay, alphabet soup, SSRI,
selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors.
Thank you. So you didn't help.
I didn't go to medical school either.
Neither did you play a doctor on TV.
Yeah,
but hold on.
I've got to take a break.
Yeah.
And we can finish this point on the other side because there's so much information here.
So much.
But I do want to let our listeners know that we are continuing this conversation, as always, on Sirius XM Channel 141. Again, if you need assistance, if someone you know is contemplating suicide, please call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 800-273-8255. 800-273-8255. That's 800-273-8255. Of course, that phone number will be posted on WHUR.com after 9 o'clock or so, as will this conversation in a podcast. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. G calling from D.C. Janice calling from Maryland. Kevin calling from District Heights. We're going to talk to you next. Want to hear from some men as well. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. Jeff Brown is next with The Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back in a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about black men and depression, black men and mental health. It is time for us to talk about it. My guests are Dr. Jeff Menzie. He's a clinical psychologist and lead consultant with Mind on the Matter. And Dr. Gina Brown, Dean of the School of Allied Health here at Howard University. Lines are open. Give us a call if you have a question or a comment about black men and mental health. And I would encourage men to call. Certainly, we will talk to anyone, particularly if there happens to be a family member that loves the men in their family. But certainly, we definitely want to speak to men about this issue that is so critical to their health and welfare. So we certainly invite them to call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. G, calling from D.C., what's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing just fine, G. Go right ahead.
Hey, great. Well, first of all, I'm glad you guys are having this platform. It's so important because too often, I mean, we just don't talk about these things, especially in the black community. And I grew up, you know, battling depression all of my adult life. I'm in my early 50s now, and I didn't really get help until I was in my late 40s to the point where it became so critical. And, you know, I think with black families and the black community, especially for myself, you know, everything that happened, you're always told to suck it up or you'll get over it or, you know, and the painful issues are never addressed, so you just learn to internalize everything. And at some point, at least in my case, you know, it just came to a head where I started having those feelings of hopelessness. And it never happened to me that I just took it up on myself one day because I saw the direction I was headed in mentally to just go get help. And it's the best thing that ever happened to me. I wish someone told me years ago, just go talk to somebody. It's going to make you feel better.
Yeah, yeah. Well, gee, yeah. But you said you are getting help now?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. It's a continuing thing. I don't stop anytime soon.
No, thank you. Thank you so much. We appreciate your phone call and continued good health to you. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Janice calling from Maryland. Janice, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I have a comment. I really wish that more men get assistance with mental health, depression, anxiety, whatever the name is. It's not a label. It's not a bad thing. It is life-altering. Mm. I think a lot of people think just because you don't have tubes and breathing tubes and oxygens and pulling, you know, oxygen tanks, they don't think it's a serious thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those diseases, if I could say that word, that it's unseen, but it's real. I suffer from depression and anxiety and a few other things. I was in the military, vet, on a lot, but when I got out in the early 90s, it was hard to transform back to civilian life. Mm-hmm. Things are being changed now. Things are getting better. But when I came home, you know, my family is like, something's wrong with her. Mm. I'm like, no, something's wrong with y'all. And it's
right.
A constant
right.
battle.
Right.
My doctors and I fought it for years. There's nothing wrong. And thank goodness I had a great doctor that supported me, And again, being military and gaining rank early, it's like, you're not talking to me like that. And my doctor talked to me like that. Mm-hmm. He had that hard conversation, but he was still professional. He was still personal. He was on spot. And I can't thank him enough. I go to mm-hmm. my meetings when I need to, mm-hmm. if I need to, because I know they're there. But often, just knowing that you have support
mm-hmm.
yeah.
helps you a lot. It's a struggle. I've lost a family member.
Well, Johnese, let me stop you there. Dr. Menzies wanted to make a comment. Please go right ahead.
It's very important because both of the sister that's talking now and the brother GB to call before, they're both demonstrating for us how people can take the initiative on their own mm-hmm. to seek out the help. Mm-hmm. And what happens is typically once you get that first experience of having help to pull you out of depression or to help to address whatever mental disorder you're experiencing, it gets you to a point to where you can then take the initiative on your own, become self-empowered, and figure out other ways to take control of this thing. And because it is the mind and because it is not tangible, right, the rest of the world can't see your mind. We have to infer what's going on in your mind based on your behavior, mm-hmm. observable behaviors. Mm-hmm. And because it's not so tangible, people tend to overlook it. And if a person is always looking through the eyes with cataracts, then that's how the world looks to them. And so a person looking through the eyes of a depressed individual, that's just the normal. It becomes the norm. And again, we can't stress this enough. Get assistance. Talk to somebody. And when somebody tries to pull you into the world of receiving guidance, whether it's a spouse, whether it's your children giving you indication, if it's parents, if it's coworkers, if it's just a good friend, because a lot of times we miss the indications, we miss the gentle nudges to go get help, especially in our relationships. I know plenty of people who end up divorced, end up separated because somebody has an undiagnosed, untreated mental health issue. Mm-hmm. And it shows up as just drama in the relationship mm-hmm. when actuality there's an issue going on with the individual. And mm-hmm. if they seek help, it typically helps to smooth things out. But mm-hmm. the other flip side of that, and I want to get real quick, is that sometimes when a person begins to heal, in the relationship, the other individual, their stuff starts to show up where they became dependent on the drama that the mentally ill person brought to the relationship. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they will antagonistically try to bring that stuff back out of the individual and sabotage their healing process. Mm-hmm. It's a very deep game. Mm-hmm.
Johnese, we wish you the best of health, and thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Kevin, calling from District Heights. Thanks for hanging on, Kevin. What's on your mind?
Thank you for first and foremost for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been listening, I just wanted to make another point in terms of the mental health issue. We have a crisis now in the black community mm-hmm. where there's no fathers in the household at all, and we have young men walking around idolizing and reacting like their mothers do. And I'm not saying that in a bad way, but most men don't act in a way of emotion. And so a lot of that, to me, has a lot to do with the missing component of the father being in the house. I mean, the Census Bureau did a statistic, and it came back that 19.7 million children overall don't have men in their household, period. Mm. And in the ethnicity breakdown, the black father, it was 67% of black men not in a home at all with their sons. And so, I mean, yeah, there may be an imbalance. But where does it come from? Where does it start? And I think that's kind of the root of where we need to start talking about the mental health issue, because we can go into the community, how they grew up, things that they seen. If they don't have a father figure, the mother can't be the mother and a father. And we know the mothers raise the sons, but men need to raise men.
Dr. Brown, do you have any thoughts about what Kevin was just sharing?
I do. Kevin, there's a good point to what you're actually saying in terms of the disproportionality of where African-American men are. And we have to realize that weighted against what he's actually saying is the fact that black men experience a higher mortality rates than anybody else. And they die 7 years sooner than any other population. They have a higher rate of poverty and unemployment, and the exposure of blacks to greater inequalities within social and economic environments, including exposure to racism, all cause those types of depressive behaviors that make you not want to be a part of a family. When you go to work, as somebody would say, and you beat down by the man, and then you come home and you're beat down again, and then you can't provide, or your income is lower than what's actually needed. Those are the types of things that make our black men feel half then, or less than, or three fifths of a man, and it makes him sometimes not want to be a part of the family. So not making an excuse for that, but you have to remember that that population, our African-American men, experience so many other things that no other population experiences. It's a wonder that we still have black men left.
We have articles that recently came out, you know, saying that black men are the white supremacists of the black community. You know, it's just so much. It was a real article. They were serious with it, comparing the so-called stereotypical and oftentimes not real labels that black men have to endure. And so, again, it's like pressure from everywhere. And again, not making excuses. I myself am a black man. Always have been in my adult life. In case y'all couldn't tell. But I mean, it's so much pressure. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is unseen. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of you can't really put your finger on it, but you feel it constantly. I mean, you come home and sometimes in relationships, you know, the father is undermined. Mm-hmm. You know, think about back in the 60s and 70s, you know, when welfare came around and the man could not be in the house. You know, and so, so Susie social worker shows up and you got to hide in the closet or leave when you know she's coming.
Exactly.
And the kids see you having to run and hide. Mm-hmm. You know, their mother, your wife might see you having to run and hide. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Uncle Sam is bringing a check in. And so because we're in a material and capitalist based society, mm-hmm. you know, the breadwinner, quote unquote, role is so important. But again, it's so many levels to this and so many mm-hmm. layers to this. But the underlying thing is, brothers, do not be afraid to seek help. Mm-hmm. That's actually a sign of strength and mm-hmm. not weakness.
Absolutely.
Kevin, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Here was something for your consideration as it relates to social pressures that may lead to, let's say, depression or mental health issues. And it comes from a unique place. Michael P. Jordan, mm-hmm. who played Killmonger.
Michael mm-hmm. B. Jordan, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mike, thank you.
In
Black Panther, mm-hmm. he spoke about needing yes. counseling after portraying that character because it was so far from who he is as a person. Also, even before that, I remember this, that Denzel Washington, playing Alonzo Harris in Training Day.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And he talked about all of the in-character work that he needed and the counseling that he needed to come out of that character mm-hmm. long after mm-hmm. that film was shot, and even talked about how his wife spoke to him about, you need to talk to someone. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to be a multi-million-dollar actor to realize that some of the pressures and responsibilities of your job.
Because our men are in character every day. Depending on where they work and depending on what's happening with them, they can have to go to character. Denzel Washington gets millions for being in character. Some of our African-American men have to be in character because they're not accepted where they work or where they go or what they do or when they come home. So they're in character every day. And so you have those social and economic components that have increased exposure to them. You have the racism and discrimination. You have violence and poverty. You have factors that adversely impact their mental health. And then you wonder why they're depressed.
And another really good example of that is Tupac Shakur when he played Bishop in the movie Juice. Mm. He literally changed. He went so deep into that thug character, and you see a very clear change in his public demeanor after that. And
you know, say he and, was thug.
No, I mean, no, not beforehand. You know, if you listen to his early works, you know
he was thug light.
He had thug tendencies.
Yeah, but they were exasperated when he played. I mean, it's well known. Tretch from Naughty by Nature talked about knowing him before and after mm-hmm. that, and spoke directly to how he changed at his core. Mm-hmm. It's almost like he had a personality shift. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the thing about, like you were saying, Doc, about being in character, our young brothers are in character walking down the street
Absolutely.
Sometimes in the hood. They've got to portray themselves as hardcore
Absolutely.
Because they don't want to be seen as easy prey in the hood or in their community.
So that's
part of that whole character piece. And personality is about persona, putting on a mask
exactly.
in order to play the role.
But it comes from nature. When you're with a bear and a bear is about to attack you, what do they tell you to do?
They say to ball up in the fetal position.
No, they say make yourself bigger than the than
now, that's for a hyena. You ain't going to get bigger than a bear.
No, seriously. The
thing for a bear, you ball up in fetal position.
Oh, I thought you stood still. You don't move slowly. Either way, your point, Dr.
My point is, make yourself bigger than what it is that's coming after you. And so in the hood, if you grew up in the black neighborhood, then you have to walk. You can't show fear. Mm-mm. If you show fear, you're going to be eaten.
It's like blood in the water for sharks.
No, exactly. Yeah. You have to walk around and you have to have a persona if you want to stay safe. Because if not, the weakest link is about to be eaten.
And then when you look at popular culture as well, we have the rewarding of that identity. We have the rewarding of this hardcore a demonstration of self. So right now you've got three hip hop artists, you know, that are locked down. One is Bobby Shmurda. You know, he put on the persona of being, you know, a murderer, gangster thug. You've got Tekashi 6ix9ine. Mm-hmm. You know, he's in jail right now singing and snitching on his crew. And then you've got and then you got 21 Savage, who's being deported right now. But all three of them, they demonstrated themselves as being hardcore. But now when they're trying to get them out of trouble, mm-hmm. all these are good role models in the community and the hood. So they put on this mask, and it's what's rewarded by these multi-million dollar contracts mm-hmm. and his fame. And so our young people are looking at that and say, that's what I must do too. Right. And they can't show their pain. They can't be sad. You know, they're not getting enough hugs from dad. You know, they don't see their father's cry.
Right.
You know, and so a lot of this is, you know, building up.
And this is not a new thing.
Absolutely not.
I can speak of, you know, when I was a teenager mm-hmm. and even hanging with my male peers, and it seemed at that time so innocent, but in the context of this conversation, it is exactly that when some of the guys were saying, well, you've got to learn how to do your pimp walk, that mm. cool,
right, exactly.
That cool walk. And for us, it was just, you know, fun and games and who can look the coolest. Mm-hmm. But even in that, who can look the coolest is probably the one who is at, you know, the top of the heap, which goes back to the point of certainly one being eaten alive. We talked before this program, again, as we were discussing this, I remember two books, one during the 90s, one called Cool Pose,
yes. mm-hmm.
which talked mm-hmm. about the masks mm-hmm. that black men
that's right
have to wear specifically as it relates to dealing with the police, but it also talked about the greater community, and also Michelle Wallace's book Black Macho and the Myth of the Superwoman mm-hmm. back in the late 70s, which is, and that book is still very, very relevant mm-hmm. today, where you had, as it relates to men, talking about how they dealt with black machismo mm-hmm. Within themselves.
You remind mm-hmm. me of Gwendolyn Brooks' poem, We Real Cool. Mm-hmm. You know, the last
yes,
line is, we
exactly.
die soon.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, mm-hmm.
How do we fix this? And I ask that because, for example, when I said earlier, someone may have, when it comes to some of the social issues, all is right with the world. Mm-hmm. And they may not have any biochemical imbalances. And then your mother dies.
Mm.
What's the difference between the blues and depression? And can chronic depression be triggered by one social issue, such
Absolutely.
As the loss of a loved
one? So there are five components in life that are considered triggers. Major. I mean, there are many, many more, but five major ones. Death of a spouse, death of a parent, loss of a job. Dr. Jeff, the other two that we are talking about in terms of the five things that are major in life, anything that's longer than 2 weeks, any type of depressive episode that's longer than 2 weeks is diagnosed, can be diagnosed as a depressive disorder. So when you have the loss of a spouse, the loss of a job, the loss of a child, the loss of a parent, and any a major life threatening disease process, though when any one of those five components, they can trigger you into a depressive disorder. And that's very normal, because anytime you have something that's bigger than you, if you don't learn how to deal with it, it's probably going to take you down. So the bottom line is, how do we deal with those depressive disorders? If it's biochemical, then either way we get help, whether it's counseling or medications. And when you talked about being in school, when I was in school, I went to a PWI, predominantly white institution, and I went to a HBCU. Let me just redeem that component.
All right.
I only went to the PWI freshman year.
I was about to say.
Because my sister went to HBCU. HBCU, and I was like, I don't want to do that. And then after that first year at PWI, I found Jesus and went to the HBCU.
Amen.
So you did the educational swirl.
I did the swirl. There you go. You know, and made my kids go to an HBCU because I understood the value of an HBCU.
And they love you for it.
Oh, if they did not, I wouldn't care. But but the bottom line is, my friends, my PWI friends, my white friends were, oh, let's get a tranquilizer. My black friends were, girl, if I don't get myself together, my mama's going to beat the life out of me.
You did?
And so in our community, the way we dealt with depressions was very different. So how do we deal with that now? If it's biochemical in nature, we receive medications that will help us to balance, just like the sister who called in earlier, with that bipolar component. We balance those chemicals. If it's social, the loss of a parent, the loss of a spouse, we receive counseling. We work through the situation. We talk through it. We have clothesline conversations. But instead of talking across a clothesline, because black people too bougie to hang their clothes out now, we pay to go to a counselor. Or we sit and talk to someone who
in a salon.
Right. In a salon. And I'm going to tell you, I can tell you every conversation with my black hair that is 100% black that I get relaxed on a regular basis, because if not, at this week six, you will hear the distant beat of a drum from Africa.
Nice.
Of the beats coming to the back of my hair.
Music. Or it could be just go-go, but either way,
my hair does not play well with others. So I go consistently. And in going to that place, I can tell you about every conversation that has been a counseling session for everybody in there. And it's a global group session. So I'll compare that to going to a psychologist, one of the best that I know in the area, Dr. Joyce Woods, who has group sessions. And if you go to those sessions, she has you talk out loud to people. It's the same thing in getting your hair done.
And so, and that's very important, because we do, as black men, we do have things like that, you know.
But do you use them?
I'm a black man. I'm trying to tell you. We'd have things like that. We talk to each other. Mm-hmm, you know, sometimes, you know, younger generation, it's just us sitting around in the basement. I remember plenty of times in my mom's basement, me and my boys sitting around talking about real issues, talking about our relationships, talking about how we're dealing with things, talking about how our parents is getting on our nerves. Mm-hmm, so we do have these outlets. They may not be as consistent. In fact, they're not going to look the same way as the outlet, you know, for our sisters. It's just not going to be the same way. We're not going to express it the same way.
But here's the thing about that. Yeah. As another black man and listening, your friend, because you have the credentials.
No, this is back.
Okay, back. All right, then you're blessed and lucky.
Exactly.
Not everybody has it.
I will tell you some of the conversations that I've heard in the barbershop and that black men discuss as it relates to addressing those problems that may be disguised as something else, but really have to do with this issue. Unfortunately, not all brothers are giving good advice.
And so now what happens, though, we have a lot of mental
good support.
Health, we have a lot of mental health specialists that are now taking the conversation to the barbershops because we know that's where brothers are convening.
Right.
You know, it's like, for example, Afia Mangum, she's the past, and Billy Shaka, she's the past president of local ABCI. And she takes it, Association of Black Psychologists, local chapter. And so she takes the conversation, you know, to the barbershops, to the hair salon. She has what she calls psychotherapy. You know, and another thing that's happening right now is that I'm working with Taraji P. Henson's organization, you know, and her executive director, Tracy, is going around the country trying to identify people on various levels that are bringing this conversation to brothers, to young men, you know, as well as to the sisters. But that is a point of focus right there. And so it is happening. And it's happening, and it looks differently. When you look at the sports teams, for example, you know, the brothers there, they are communicating. We have best friends. My best friend and I growing up, we talked about everything. We helped to process things. Mm-hmm. But I'm not saying that to take away from the notion that we do absolutely need that. This is what I do. And I look at it every day, and I wish that more brothers would step up and accept the fact that they need assistance, and then accept the assistance that is available for them.
I think that you are the exception to one of the rules, and I'm not going to say the rule because the rule moves, but I will tell you that the way I got into this topic is in 1999 when I was doing my dissertation at George Mason University. I was the only African American in my class, and everybody was writing on their people. The Asians were writing on the Asians, the whites were writing on the whites, and I said, I've got to give back. So let me do something for the African Americans. When I went to look at the literature of African American females, there was a plethora of information. When I went to look at the literature on African American males, I found less than 7,000 studies nationwide on anything to do with African American males.
Which is what I said in the beginning of this conversation. So, there's not a lot of information.
What I want to say is that there is a lot of information. It's like, for example, the Jawanza Kanjufa been publishing his book about countering the conspiracy to destroy black boys.
But that's one of seven.
And I'm talking about statistics.
Right.
And Jawanza Kanjufa notwithstanding. But what I'm talking about, when you were talking about well-funded,
right,
in-depth, there's not as much information as there should be. Because I'm running out of time, and I do want to get to this really critical point. How do you find, and this is important, a culturally competent counselor for this issue?
And that's the perfect segue, because when you look at how we value what we do have, for example. So there is a plethora of literature on black men and black boys, psychologically speaking, by well-credentialed black psychologists.
But not as much as you have out there for every other population.
That we don't value it the same. Mm. I can go back for ages looking at Joseph Baldwin, Daudi Azebo, Naeem Akbar. They've been doing this work since the 60s and 70s. But what happens is that the top-tier journals don't accept their publications.
That's right.
Because these are black men talking about black men. Mm-hmm. And so we get into the mode, even in academia. I'm an academician as well. We overlook that stuff too. Why? Because it's not a tier one journal, right? It's not a tier two journal. It's not well distributed. Other people aren't citing it, but it doesn't mean that it's not there.
So how do you pick?
So what happens is we have the Association of Black Psychologists. If you are looking for a culturally competent psychologist, therapist, social worker, the Association of Black Psychologists has a database on their website that lists their members, all of which are culturally competent to one degree or another and definitely aspire to be better, on their website by state. Mm-hmm. And that way you can find them, the Association of Black Psychologists. I'm a member. I'm the former president of the D.C. chapter myself. And we have culturally competent organizations such as Progressive Life Center here. We have several rites of passage organizations throughout the nation, all of which are linked to culturally competent mental health specialists. We're out there. We just need people to understand that, you know, the grass is as green on our side.
That's right.
And that we can relate to you differently. Like of the youth that I work with, when I work with them, you know, after they leave their white therapist and they, you know, when they come to me when I was serving as a clinician, it was a breath of fresh air. Mm-hmm. The parents couldn't understand why it was so different when they were working with me. I said, because I come from where they come from. Mm-hmm. And that energy, because therapy is about the exchange. Clinical work is about the exchange. Coaching is about the exchange of energy. Mm-hmm. And when a person comes in and you can resonate with them, a lot of the defense comes down. You can get down to the issue. That's why it works in a hair salon. Somebody mm-hmm. massaging your scalp, you can't be defensive after that.
You hope not. The other component is agreeing with Dr. Jeff and saying word of mouth. We know each other. We have Howard University Hospital here that has clinicians. When I say we as an African-American community know who to go to. I could tell you off the bat 5 African-American counselors, which would be fantastic, which will blow your mind. It's about word of mouth. Mm-hmm. It's about sharing with each other. Hey, let me tell you about Dr. Menez. Let me tell you about Dr. Joyce Woods. Let me tell you about this person. Let me tell you about Wendy Gordon. Let me tell you about the people who are out there who are doing this thing. Let me tell you about Deborah Anderson. If we just tap into each other and stop making this a taboo subject and start to help each other the same way I be able to recommend to you a great dietitian or a fantastic general practitioner or a phenomenal OBGYN, I should be able to also recommend to you a fantastic culturally competent person that you can work with who's a counselor. And they don't have to have a doctorate. They just need to be trained in what it is that they're actually doing. So they could have a master's in that same subject, but be trained in order to be able to help you to what you are. We have to recommend to each other, you need help. And here's how you get that help. And there's nothing wrong with getting that help.
Yeah, because if you don't get that help, if something is only a little wrong, it could be severely wrong if
you know, yeah, if correct. You don't get the help. I think that's a great place for us to end this conversation. I want to thank both of you for coming in and sharing your expertise, Dr. Jeff Menzies and Dr. Gina Brown. Thank you,
thank you.
Both.
Thank
and
you
as I said earlier, we will have resources posted on WHUR.com a little bit after 9 o'clock tonight. If you need any help or if you have any questions, if you need help for perhaps a spouse, a mate, or if you need it for yourself, that information will be on our website. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141, for this Tuesday, February 12th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.